Welcome to Lamestream here on the 440 Sports Network. My name is Braden Gall. You can follow me on Twitter.com at Braden Gall.
My name is Steve Cavendish. You can follow me on Twitter.com, BlueSky.com, Instagram.com, all the .coms.
Okay.
There you go. Cavendish. If you like the show, the one you're listening to right now, rate, review, subscribe. But more importantly, just tell someone that you know that you like. No, wait, that you love the show. And they will too. And they should be listening to it right now. Braden, we're not here.
No, we're not here.
I mean, we're here. We're here. We're here in your ear holes, but we're not here. Where
I don't know. I don't know at the time of this that this drops, as the kids say. I don't know where you are physically. I know where I am, and I am walking around in a giant cement playground in Florida currently. Forced family vacation, of course, spring break. Happy forced family vacation to everybody out there in Nashville, Davidson County Metro Schools. Glad that everybody gets some time off this week and gets to spend some time with the family. I had a long conversation with Richard Johnson, who is one third of the excellent triumvirate that runs Split Zone Duo. We've had Stephen Godfrey on the show. Alex Kirshner is the other host. And we had a long conversation last week on SEC Football Live. And I wanted you guys to hear that conversation because we talked a little ball. There's a couple of nice nuggets in there about Nico or about Arkansas, but he's a college football expert, covers the SEC as well as everybody else. He's a Florida guy, I believe, Florida graduate. And we spent a lot of time, though, talking about the coverage, about the SEC's power, how they message things, the future of the game, the future of the coverage, what fans really want. And so I thought, you know what? Even though it happened last week, I want you guys to hear it because I think it's a really interesting look into how they view the sport. And I think the South in particular, with college football and like the free labor force and paying players, college football and the SEC in the South in particular has a lot of tensions right now that they're working. That, let's just say they're working through some stuff. College football is.
Also, you're lazy and we didn't want to have to record three shows in one time.
Lazy is.
I'm just saying.
You may call me many things, Steve Cavendish. You can call me a gas bag.
Lazy's not one of them.
You can call me a gas bag. You can call me a blowhard. You can call me an opinionated jackwagon, but you cannot call me lazy.
As you listen to this, I was glad to have the week off too because the Nashville Banner will begin publishing kind of daily content and a morning newsletter beginning on March 18th. So if you're anywhere near a screen, go to nationalbanner.com, give us your email, and we will send you things. We will send you all of the things. But we're excited. We have a bunch of really great content planned for the week beginning March 18th, and I just think you're going to want to tune in because there's some really good journalism about to come your way.
If you wanted to read all that content at a particular location across town, where would one go consume and maybe sit and consume that content?
I would park myself somewhere on Charlotte Avenue or on 8th Avenue at a place called a little retiring shy place called 8th and Roast.
A little thing called 8th and Roast. Obviously on Charlotte Avenue, great location over there. You got the original OG location. Pretty smart business decision, by the way, to open up a shop on 8th Avenue, a coffee shop back in the day. Pretty well done there. And the airport as well as Vanderbilt, two other locations. So they have four locations. But, of course, you can buy their beans that are
just better. They're just better.
Everywhere across the city at grocery stores near you. Buy the 8th and Roast beans. Take the 5 seconds. It's an extra 5 seconds of work to grind them and put them in the pot in the morning. They are excellent. That is how my wife drinks all the coffee. That's how I drink all the coffee. But we do love... If I was perusing some local coverage of the state legislator or of the Metro Council, I nationalbanner.com while sitting at an 8th and Roast location. I think that's a good way to go.
You go to 8th and Roast.
It's like
so.
Reading the banner might be like a shot of espresso these days.
one thing I want to say about this Richard Johnson interview. I like Richard a lot. I mean, I think he's a smart guy. No free shouts, but. Split Zone Duo. Those are our guys. Those are our friends.
Yep.
And
yep.
Richard does a thing on their on their paid feed. They're on Substack, and you can, as a paid subscription, they do a thing called Scheme School, where he will break down, he and other will bring in experts, and they will break down particular kind of like X and O scheme ideas. It's really good. The three of them all have kind of different roles to play on that podcast. Richards is X and O nerd, and it's a lot of fun. Yeah. That podcast in general, I mean, I'm a paid member. They do great work, and I was really, really glad to listen to this interview with Richard.
Yep, he's a super smart guy. Had a lot of fun with him, and you're not going to hear anything from us after the fact. Hope everybody enjoyed your spring break, and of course, March 18th, Nashville Banner gets turned on again. I guess the second 2.0 banner, 3.0. What are you guys now? Like 6.0? What are you at?
Two and a half, two and three quarter. Okay. Something like
all that. Right. So make sure you check that out March 18th. Otherwise, I hope everybody had a great, great spring break. This was our conversation with Split Zone Duos, one third of the host of that program. Obviously, you can catch it at splitzoneduo.com. Here was my conversation with the great Richard Johnson. Special guest Richard Johnson joining us here from Split Zone Duo to hang out and talk ball. RJ, Richard, good to see you. Thank you for giving us some time today. How are you, sir?
Absolutely. I'm doing well. The weather outside in New York, not so great, Timmy, but look, I'm glad to be inside talking SEC football, if nothing else.
Well, so we're going to talk ball because obviously we got to talk ball, and 12 months a year of college football, you know better than anybody, it never goes anywhere. But I also want to get into sort of the coverage and how our coverage has evolved of this sport, because it's going through so many changes. I'm curious your perspective, the audience that you guys have built at Split Zone Duo. Go check it out, of course, become a Patreon, go sign up. You got the YouTube page, the whole deal. But I'm curious what fans want. I'm curious how we evaluate coaches. I'm curious how we cover the sport, what topics are on, you know, sort of taboo, and how you guys go about navigating some of that stuff. So we're going to talk media. We're going to talk ball. We're going to talk coaches. We're going to talk future of the conference. We've got a lot of stuff to get to today on the show. So I do really appreciate you hanging out, and I think you're a perfect voice to speak to some of this stuff. Of course, if you want to jump into the comment section and ask questions, I will see. I'll be your content moderator, Richard, if that's okay with you.
That's fine with me.
I'll moderate the content for you guys out there. So if you want to jump into the comments, please, by all means. And of course, share while we are live. Come on and hang out. Give us the subscription on the YouTube page, and share it wherever it is that you might be catching us. So I'm going to start with some of the basic stuff here. The SEC, it seems like, is throwing its weight around in very political form from a negotiating standpoint with the Big Ten, trying to expand the playoff. I feel like they're floating a bunch of like kind of like just shit they don't really want and never really will get away with in order to take that off the table and come across as benevolent if the playoff expands to 14. Does that make sense? Like, hey, we're going to get, you know, we want an automatic bid for our conference and for the Big Ten, but for nobody else. And then a couple of other things, bye weeks and et cetera in the playoff. Is it all just politicking at this point for them to then back off all that stuff, kind of like the rules did a couple years ago with like the clock stopping after an incomplete pass, right? They floated it, didn't go well. Do you think this is where we're going to end up with, is the 14 team playoff with the SEC backing off all that extra stuff that we were talking about?
Yeah, you know, I like, first of all, to me, 14 does not make more sense than 16. Like, if you're going to go higher than 12, you might as well go 16. But I understand that obviously with 14, you bring buys into the equation, yada, 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 yeah. What the NFL playoffs are. Like, what bothers me the most about the SEC thing isn't the... What bothers me about the SEC and the Big Ten's proposal is just the lack of sporting merit that it has. Like,
this makes sense. Like,
this is a competition. Like, yeah, you guys are already probably going to win it between the two of you. You know, any one of 6, 7, 8 teams that the two of us can name off the top of our heads are going to win this thing more often than not. Like, we're all adults here. But, like, it is, to me, insulting as someone... or it would be to me insulting as someone who administrates a competition to let them throw this weight around in this like invitational format, more invitational than it is right now. Yes, I hear you, Florida State folks.
I mean, that's why I feel like it's all just negotiating tactics. Like, we're going to ask for the whole hog knowing that we just want the pork shoulder. You know what I mean? Like, if that's the right analogy, it might not be. But
it's just so weak to me. Like, you are the strongest conference. Everybody knows conferences. We know it. Like, there's no debate. So if you're going to sit here and say it just means more, and you're going to tell me it just means more every day on your commercials and on your network, just go beat them on the field. Like, you've been doing it, you know? Yeah, it's so unnecessary. And to me, it's just an unnecessary burning of you know, whatever goodwill or whatever leverage. Like, you don't have to use every single ounce of leverage every single time if you want to continue to position yourself as a benefactor and an arbiter of this sport for the goodwill of it, right? Like, it's, you know, if Jerry Jones brings some proposal, like, he doesn't always cloak it in, like, for the good of the game, right? Like, pretty much everybody knows, like, well, he ain't gonna do what's good for the Cowboys. Like, that's just what he's gonna do. But the SEC and the Big Ten, like, try to purport themselves as these, like, arbiters of the game and stewards, I should say, is probably the better word. Stewards of the game and stewards of the product. And yet they are trying to quite literally make the championship level of the product less competitive. Like, that just doesn't jive with me. It doesn't sit well with me.
No, and that's why I think it's bullshit. I think it's all like saber rattling to get to where, and ultimately I don't really actually care about 12 or 14. If we want to have a discussion about six teams in a playoff versus 14, there's actual differences there. It doesn't feel like there's a structural difference there. They're going to make their money. They're going to have a couple of extra games to sell to TV partners, etc. Here's a question from, and I've asked everybody I've known this off season. Some people on the record, some people off the record, but I want to hear what you have to say about it. And that is, like, and I know you guys have talked about this, I think a little bit on SCD, but the gap between the middle class and the upper middle class and the top of the conference, let's just stick with the SEC for the sake of conversation. Ole Miss and Missouri are trying something different because of the new format in the sport. Like, Ole Miss in particular, they are trying to do something different. Never before done in college football. It's more like free agency in the NFL than anything else. We're going for it, whatever that means. Do you think that the playoff actually creates parity and the chaos and the roster management and all the things that we are discussing and have to cover and fans are probably tired of hearing about? Or do you think there's an actual, or is it just an illusion of parity that is like, okay, now we're going to evaluate coaches on 10 wins getting into the playoff, and that's where the bar is going to be for Kentucky and Ole Miss and Missouri and, you know, Arkansas, South Carolina, middle-class programs that don't win national championships. Is the gap actually close between Ole Miss and Georgia, or is it just an illusion?
I would say it's more of the illusion, and I will give the people who administrate the playoff this credit. They have never cloaked the playoff expansion in anything other than participation. And this is as somebody who talks to these people. I go to these meetings. Yeah. Like, I know what I'm talking about here. Like, the word that they've used about this is participation. We are expanding this for participation. They do not use the word parity as far as who they expect to be a champion. And I think that's fine. I think that is perfectly fine. While I did not think Florida State would have won a game in this year's playoff, I did think they had earned the right to prove on the field whether they could or couldn't. That, to me, was what bothered me so much about leaving Florida State out of this year's 14 version. But yeah, I like, just be straight up with the audience, be straight up with the fans. This is about participation. This is about bringing more people to the dance, having more high leverage single elimination football games, which are awesome. Single elimination, real single elimination, is awesome. It's not going to turn down rivalry weekend. I refuse.
Oh, there's no, yeah, like, I agree.
Auburn is still going to want to beat Alabama. Trust me. Like, it's going to be okay.
Well, for years we used the old Egg Bowl, 0-11, 0-11, doesn't matter. It'd still be the most important. You can't use that phrase for 25 years covering the sport and then turn around and say, oh, but the rivalry is not going to mean as much if there's a playoff. Like, of course, it still matters.
If the Crapple Cup meant a ton when both both Washington and Wazoo were bad in whatever year that was, like, again, it's going to be okay. But
11 turnovers though in the Civil War, that's pretty good. It's pretty solid.
But the participation aspect, it's good. That's fine. Like, let's see some of these teams, especially in the first round, in other stadiums that you may not typically see them in, and different matchups. And again, like, of course, there's going to be an upset every now and then. That's just the nature of sports, the nature of college sports. So you're going to get some fun. But yeah, I think it's overall pretty fun.
All right, I want to do some quick rapid fire on ball, and then I want to get into some of the coverage and media and how much we know about these teams and why it's changed and how it's changed. And if it's for the better in some areas and for the worse in other areas. Ole Miss or Missouri, who are you buying in 2024 of the two that are both going to get preseason top 10 love, 10 wins last year, returning quarterbacks, etc.?
I'd probably say Ole Miss. Obviously, it's a lot flashier of a name, and so we're all kind of gravitating to it. Preseason top 10, yada, yada, yada. I think I'm going to take Ole Miss. I think I'll take
okay.
Ole Miss.
Okay. I think the departures on defense for Missouri, five guys getting drafted potentially, Blake Baker moving to LSU, I think that's a lot to overcome. So I'm kind of with you there. One of these guys is going to be a superstar, and I think we kind of know who it could be. But of the middle tier of the SEC, which is what, again, in March, what I find most fascinating is this sort of middle tier of teams that all have a shot at a playoff, but a lot of them are quarterback dependent, young, talented guys, whether that's Garrett Nussmeier at LSU, Connor Wigman at Texas A&M, Nico Iamaleava at Tennessee, Jackson Arnold, hear crazy, awesome things about Arnold and his talent in Norman. Of those names and of those teams, who is the guy that you think hits the hardest and gives the team the chance to actually compete the most?
It's got to be.
Like, where are you leaning?
Got to be Tennessee. I mean, offense machine, go Burr. I mean, it's crazy. Like you know, when it hits, good luck. And that's the beauty of that offense and its simplicity. And so yeah, I'm banking on Tennessee there.
Who's most stressed mid November? Sam Pittman, Billy Napier, Shane Beamer.
Billy Napier, because of that.
Really. Stuff.
And I, like, because of what the back half of that schedule is, I personally, like, look, newsflash to the entire SEC, everybody's schedule is hard. Nobody's schedule is cake anymore. All right. Alabama now has to play a Texas or an Oklahoma, but you know what I mean. So yes, is Florida's schedule hard? Of course it is. But I think for that reason, you're going to look up in November and we're going to have to say, all right, what's he got to do here to kind of salvage this from a reputation standpoint, yada, yada, yada.
What's funny is there's not a lot of downward pressure, I don't think, from Scott Strickland currently.
No, I know there's not. I know there's not.
Yeah, and honestly, the booster pool at Florida is different than some of the booster pools at other schools. It's a smaller group, and they get asked for money all the time. And what I find interesting is I think they actually could pull an upset or two in that back half of that schedule, whether it's Ole Miss at home, whether it's LSU at home. I think they can beat A&M and Miami early. I think Graham Mertz and the offense is not the problem. It's, you know, what does the defense look like? Yeah. But again, I don't know. Arkansas, I don't know, Sam Pittman's, he's got to do some work. Bobby Petrino, Shane Beamer, I'm fascinated by what Shane Beamer is doing, just in general, all the time. It does on the field, off the field, coaching, not coaching. I just, everything Shane Beamer does is fascinating to me. If you could embed all season, you're in coaching meetings, you're at practice, you get to do the reporter thing, and I'm not expecting you to go full like Walter Isaacson on Elon. You're going to write a real story. where are your top number one, two choices in this conference that you think you would find the most material to write the best story if you were embedded the entire year, start of camp to the end of the season?
I think Arkansas, the Bobby Petrino factor at Arkansas is...
I did not expect that answer.
Fascinating to me. Arkansas, the fact that he is back there is just really something. really quite something. You can hire anybody, any swinging dude in this sport, and you can message it. It just... Yeah. And so I'm very curious about how that plays out. And I'm very curious about some of the forces that be who would like Bobby Petrino to be the head coach there again, and which rubber meets the road and what happens there by the end of the season, if the season does not go according to plan, I should say.
I did not expect that answer, but that's the journo mind that you got there. I thought there'd be a number of other places, but honestly, the two different personality types, like the way Sam Pittman communicates and how he treats people and Bobby Petrino's communication style, it does make for an interesting power struggle. There's no question about that. All right, so I think you and I talked at SEC Media Days a couple years ago about this, and I've sort of asked folks about it routinely. It, you know, we just got done. I just got done asking you a few questions about actual football, about teams that, you know, players, things like that, that is like more traditional offseason conversation. But I think we know less and less about these teams. Like up until the start of camp, we know less about these teams than ever before. Could you make the argument that that is a good thing? Like, I don't care about the coaches who make millions of dollars. Like, they're the last people I'm concerned about. But with through all of this chaos and the fans and those of us who just love the sport like you and I do, it, could you argue that it's a good thing that we are more wrong in the offseason? I mean, sure, Georgia's going to be good. Like, we know that, right? Like, they're going to be great. And Alabama's got a great roster. But it feels like we know less and less. And I think I can make the case that's a good thing. I think.
I don't necessarily think it is. I think what college football desperately tries to be year-round, it's not exactly. And like, that's the difference between it and the NFL. The NFL is year-round because it can make the draft, this draft run up in the next 3 months. It's its own circus, right? I mean, the combine is 2 weeks after the Super Bowl. Like, you roll right into it. I was just at the combine last week. The NFL is a show that rolls on. I mean, for God's sakes, the schedule release at the end of May is its own event. Yeah. Like, but college doesn't have that, partially because college free agency, it's too much. Like, NFL free agency, you can track, you can keep tabs on. Now, players are starting to move in free agency over the last 5 or 6 years like they hadn't ever before. Yeah. And obviously they're professional players in fantasy football, so we know them and yada, yada, yada. But in college, we don't know these kids. And so we don't know these rosters. And this roster turnover is so fast and furious, and it overlaps with signing days, plural. And it overlaps with bowl games. And who's opting in, who's opting in. College football's transactional, and it also overlaps with the coaching cycle. So college football, because of the portal trigger when your coach leaves and all that sort of stuff,
and the postseason,
like so college football's free agency is all packed into this like 2 month span where so much stuff is happening, and it's not spread out over the course of offseason months to drive like a consistent conversation. We're just having all these overlapping conversations about things because they're all happening at the same time on like December 20th. And by the way, I like got to buy Christmas presents and travel home. You know what I mean?
you can't do your draft, your free agency, your coaching carousel, and your playoff at the same time. Like, no, I agree that December is broken and they're going to have to figure out a way to fix that with some scheduling tweaks. I think the SEC is going to fix the portal first because it's something that they all just watched Alabama go through. And they're all kind of like, they're laughing now, but like none of them really want that to happen to them, which of course it will. I think I could argue though, going, and I don't care about what actually happens at media days, but like with fans and the conversation around teams, like I look at this year in particular, and I can make the case for LSU to jump up and win 10 games and make the playoff. Tennessee, we just got done talking about the quarterbacks. I know less today in March, but also in July, even after some more roster movement happens. And I'm going to know even less at media days than the year before. I'm going to know even less when camp opens up. Sure, we'll start to get some camp reports about freshmen like we always do. But at the end of the day, we're going to know so much. I think some of this college football has been so predictable for so long, broadly speaking, that I think the unpredictable nature of this chaotic period we're in, which will end eventually, I think it makes it more interesting going into the final days of camp. And maybe I'm just like college football media brain for like the last 25 years of just like Nick Saban, Pete Carroll, Urban Meyer, same fucking teams win every time. And maybe that's what I'm looking for, is like this unknown thing in the middle of camp that I'm not finding. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
Well, I tell people this all the time. There's only been one first time national champion in my lifetime, and it was Florida, who then did it again and again, obviously. And you know, I was just born a little too early, right before it really peaked with Spurrier. But like this is college football. There are no new kings.
Yeah,
this is how it's always been. Like, since we integrated the thing, like, no new kings. And that's kind of the way this thing has gone. And the way the cream rises to the top in the end. You know, we can have a lot of fun getting there, but everybody says 2007 was the wildest season of all time. Who won the national championship in 2007?
They never lost in regulation, though, Richard.
You
they
know?
Never lost in regulation.
You know?
They only lost in overtime. LSU, of course. Although it would have been nice to see Matt Grothy and Chase Daniel play in a championship game, you know? Like, that would have been fun. Was it Andre Woodson at Kentucky that was, like, top five one time that year?
Yeah.
And obviously, Pat White. And was it – I can't remember the Pittsburgh quarterback that beat them, obviously, as a huge underdog in that game. How have you changed the way you evaluate coaches? Are you more – like, I'm traditionally fairly conservative when it comes to evaluating coaches, in particular not at the top level, but guys like Stoops, programs like Missouri – patience and investment, I think, is undervalued in this game a lot. But we've got all this new stuff, and the game has changed, and roster management, blah, 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 blah. Wave your hands around wildly in the air to gesture. I'm curious, have you changed how you evaluate coaches, how you talk about them, how you put pressure on the job they're doing or not doing? Like, how has that changed in your mind over the last few years?
Well, the most eye-opening thing about the coaching cycle every year is I had an FBS coach tell me one time, like, head coaches at a certain level aren't hired, they're elected. And I think that has framed everything about how I view candidacies for jobs, at least at the highest level, you know, the top 30-ish. That's really how I've come to view things. The need to know ball and be the best ball knower as a head coach has gone down over the last few years since I've done this. I've been doing this about 10 years now. It's unquestionable. Because you think about college football programs are like five different things. Like, they are, like, recruiting is hospitality and sales. You know, like, you don't think about that. Like, you gotta have an idea of how to run that vertical of your organization. There's obviously your strength and nutrition and what actually happens on the field. And then there's the scouting department, which is now the pro and the college and high school scouting kind of delineation. So, yeah, to win a national championship, in my opinion, you now have to have a guy who is more than a CEO than he is a ball coach's ball coach. You know, I think you can get a little bit more ball coachy the further down the rungs you can go. Like, obviously, Kirk Ferentz at Iowa, perfect example. Iowa's not scaring anybody for a national championship, but they are going to churn out professional football players year in and year out. And they're going to develop football players because Kirk Ferentz is a tremendous football coach. So, yes, you can get away with it a little bit farther down the totem pole. But at the highest level, like, you got to be Steve Jobs. I mean, you got to have Sauron's eye on the whole deal.
Which means winning immediately.
Yes.
Is what you're saying. Like, Mike Elko, Billy Napier, that's why they're under pressure more than anybody else. I get that. I'm curious because I lean a little bit more conservative when it comes to, like, pulling the trigger on a guy.
I do too. Like, I would say I do too. Like, these things take time. I've been saying this about Billy Napier for two years. Like, these things take time and nobody wants to hear that. Okay. All right, nobody wants to hear that, but they're going to fire Billy Napier, and they're going to turn around, and you're going to say, oh, well, they've had four coaches in 9 years, I think is what it would be if they fire Billy Napier, and then you're a punchline for that reason. So, you know, there's some have it both ways in this situation.
Well, and Kentucky I find fascinating because, again, when he got the job, it was like a low-level ACC kind of facilities and the athletic department and the investment and the whole deal. But like now we've reached the point where it's like, all right, what does the second act look like for Mark Stoops? And that's a weird place to be evaluating Kentucky, frankly. And that's not meant to be insulting to Kentucky. They have great fans, hard sellouts the last few years, couple 10 win seasons, developing talent. But now it's sort of like, all right, well, now should we still be patience and investment, or is it, does the NIL thing need to move up? Like, they've been very slow on the uptick, Mitch Barnhart and company, but I don't know. I'm curious. I think evaluating coaches has now changed, and how we cover it and how we write about it and how we talk about them, I think, has evolved just as much as the game itself has.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. What do fans want? You guys have an awesome audience at Split Zone where they are willing to sort of go as deep as you guys want to go with particular stuff. I know if somebody writes a piece about conference expansion, it's going to get clicks, right? You go out there on the internet, it's going to get clicks. I'm curious how much people how much of the ball do you think you guys do in the offseason that you can do? How much, where's the saturation point on transfer portal, NIL, lawsuits, conference expansion, playoff changing? We've just talked about a bunch of it. Is there a tipping point? Is there a saturation, or is this insatiable from a college football standpoint?
I think we're about at saturation of the governance stuff, past it. I think you can only say this is an inflection point for college sports so many times. Like, seriously, like, no, as somebody who sits in these boardrooms and talks to these lawyers and yada, 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 like, college football has been teetering at the precipice for 50 years. Like, it, you know, the show will roll on. All right. We'll figure it out. And that's not to speak to competency of the leaders involved in any way, shape, or form. I mean that, like, water finds a way. And we will find a way to put the thing on the field September 1st. Make no mistake. And you will watch it. Like, there are some truisms about this thing. Uh-huh. It does not matter what happens between – and people are like, oh, well, I'm done watching college football. No, you're not. No, you're not.
Not according to the ratings.
You're not going to stop. Maybe you'll stop watching Alabama versus UAB. All right, cool. But you will be there at 8 p.m. on Saturday night when LSU plays Alabama. You will. And they know that, and everybody else knows that. And so at the end of the day, like, that's the mouthwash. The games are why we do this. The games are why you trudge and sludge through all the offseason governance and all that kind of stuff. And I get that stuff is boring. That's not my favorite stuff to cover. Lawsuit this and lawsuit that and billable hours being undefeated. Like, I don't, you know, like the state of Tennessee versus the NCAA. I'm tired of that kind of stuff. And it's all PR and marketing and all that sort of stuff to stick out your chest and say, you know, I'm fighting the NCAA and all that stuff. And the NCAA is a very easy target for a lot of reasons that are its own doing. I understand that. But yeah, like, at the end of the day, the games are the palate cleanser and the games are why we do this, you know. And I understand if somebody just says, hey, man, I'll see you in December or I'll see you in September, for instance. You know, I'll see you in the fall. Right. I'm going to tune out of it because, like, even I personally struggle with this, like, personally struggle with kind of tuning out some of the more boring aspects of the off the field stuff. And the thing is, with so much chop and change and churn with the players, you know, football's more or less fine, but basketball is like,
yeah,
I don't watch college basketball, men's or women's, but like specifically men's college basketball. Like, I'm not watching men's college basketball. I'll turn up in a week or two here and watch the tournament. And then you'll see guys who are on, you know, the fifth different team in 4 years. Like, as someone who is fine with the transfer portal as a concept and loves the ease of player movement, like, that's good. They deserve that agency. But as fans, as onlookers, like, you do have to understand and you do have to be straight up with the audience and say, like, hey, what player agency has wrought is the chop and change and teams that don't look the same and all that kind of stuff. Because remember, people say it's free agency, it's NFL free agency, like, to a point. NFL free agency, they don't sign everybody for 1 year. You know what I mean? So like, if my team signs some guy for 3 years, God, at least he'll be here for 3 years. I mean, he may be new, but I can get to know him a little bit. It's different than a grad transfer who we know is only going to be here for a year. It's different from a freshman who comes in, doesn't get playing time, and bounces. So it's a little bit of a different dichotomy.
I can't remember his first name. Was it Kovalchuk that went from Arizona to Vanderbilt as, like, the first ever, like, graduate transfer I can play right away guy, quarterback, I think. I want to say, I don't know why that name sticks in my head. But to your point, like, I used to value bowl games as a kid growing up in the 90s as, like, one of my favorite things to watch. And then I got into the business in 05 working for one of the recruiting services. And I remember covering a game in 07 thinking, oh, this is still pretty good, still pretty important. And now it's like bowl games aren't relevant. I covered Auburn's spring practice after they played in the national championship game. And it was so interesting to me because Nick Marshall was playing in his first A-Day and he'd already played in a national championship. And I remember that being a really interesting dynamic and covering it thinking this is interesting. And I don't think I've been interested in spring practice since that moment. Like, there's nothing through all, it's all important stuff, right? Like this, like you said, we can only say the sky is falling so many times before people stop listening, but I'm just, I'm trying to enjoy the unpredictable, chaotic sort of the summer evaluation period. I work at a magazine at Athlon Sports where our job is to put out the magazine way ahead of schedule, earlier than everybody else, because people like to read shit and people enjoy it and they've enjoyed it for 50 years. But we know, we have to admit to each other that we know so much less than we ever did at this stage of the offseason. And we care. I think fans are done with a lot of the, to your point, like, I think fans are done with a lot of this off this offseason stuff, which then limits the regular season even further to just those beautiful, wonderful Saturday afternoons. So that wasn't even a question, Richard. I don't know. That's just me talking at this point. I do want to ask you about the complexities of the sport and how it blends with society, because I think you guys do a great job and speak openly about college football being an excuse to talk about everything else in life. And I've always believed in that. It's hard, especially in the SEC. But part of my love, and I don't know your entire life's journey and where in every city you've lived in, but part of my love of the South and having been in the South for the last in Texas, Georgia, and Tennessee is the perception of the South is different than the reality of the South. And that tension, that human tension that exists in the South for very obvious and very well-documented reasons, I find it to be why we have so much interesting stuff, whether it's art. We've had writers on the show come from these towns. We've had musicians on the show that come from Macon and Muscle Shoals. How hard is it for audience members, for the fans to sort of get on board with that and say, look, I'm interested. Is that a new thing that's happening in 2024 because we're all more aware of the past? Is it, hey, do you still talk to fans that just are like, no, I just want to talk about the 3-4 defense and how they didn't drop a spy on Nick, you know, on Jalen Milroe at the end of the game? The evolution of covering everything else outside of the game. Take me through your journey on that.
Well, I think some of it has to do with the responsibility to tell full stories about the institutions and the players and the teams that you cover. They are more than athletes. And that's not to say that's not even to go all the way to say, like, their brands, for instance. You know, like Caleb Williams is kind of the souped-up version of that. But they're people. They're complex people. And especially as young people, especially the young black men in college football, they've seen the world change in a lot of different ways the last 6 or 8 years. Their prime, I mean, now they're prime adolescents, and you know, now we're getting the COVID babies are sort of going to be in their second kind of third year in college coming through.
TikTok babies coming soon.
TikTok babies coming soon. You know what I mean? Like it's, you know, they were 18 in 2005, folks. They're 18. They were born in 2005.
That's terrifying.
You know,
for personal reasons, by the way, for me, I mean,
you know, I think that there is an evolution of how these young men feel and how these young men express themselves. And that's been happening. I mean, that's not a new thing. But as content dissemination changes and all that sort of stuff, we have a responsibility to our audiences to give our audience the broadest picture of who these young men are and who these young men are developing into. Now, I think schools make that difficult. I think coaches make that difficult with the lockdown on access and all this sort of stuff. Like, it's like some kid delivering bulletin board material is the worst thing imaginable.
If we all see Nico throw one pass, that's the difference between winning a championship and not. That's it.
And yeah, and it's all so like it's all an attempt to be so public relationized, and if that's a word, and locked down and sanitized. And you know, I talk to 16-year-olds who think that they should sound like Russell Wilson and Tom Brady. Like it just when you level the personality, and nobody's got a personality.
Yeah,
you're not really gonna like where that goes over the course.
Yeah,
over the long course and the long tail of time, because we lose what really makes this sport interesting, and it's the human beings and the connection to the human beings that are doing it.
And to me, it's the imperfections inherent in all of that. It's not just the human beings, but the system. College football is more interesting than the NFL because of its imperfections, because of its variance, right? And so it sounds like what you're saying is you think that the athlete voice gaining power, let's say, for lack of a better term, combined with sort of, I would argue, like traditional mainstream, big picture, controllable media and the power structures, but like that's all breaking down. You guys are an example of that. The access directly to your consumers and to your audience is breaking down. And so therefore fans are more willing to come along on the journey with the difficult topics. Is that the right equation I'm laying out? Maybe?
Yeah. But I think that fans being a little bit more willing to do that is more of a broad based takeaway from media consumption in the last 4 or 5 years as diverse voices continue to be brought to the forefront, and the issues that we face inherent as people of color are brought to the forefront, and there's a little more awareness about things, and there's a little bit, like, I think this is kind of all the groundswell, especially when you've got the sport of football, which is anywhere from 50% to 60% black men, doing this at the highest levels at all different rungs and all different schools and all different places in the country. If a significant part of the college football experience is the black experience in this country, then specifically white,
without it.
Yeah. Right. Specifically white people interfacing with that is healthy and necessary.
Yeah. All right. You've been very gracious, man. I really do appreciate it. Splitzoneduo.com. Sign up. I have one more question for you, because I am a big believer, as a child of the Midwest who grew up in a Big Ten family, but has lived in the South, went to an SEC school, and like sort of loves and appreciates the dynamic between the two, and sometimes the lack of understanding between the two. I think the North-South rivalry is healthy for the SEC long-term. I think for college football to be at its healthiest, and we all know where this is going with collective bargaining and revenue sharing and two major conferences and breaking away and all the other sports go back to sort of being more regionalized, that's healthier for everybody. Whether it's 20, 24 teams, doesn't matter. That's not important. But I could see a NFC North and an AFC South, for lack of a better term, taking place in the future. Isn't that good for the SEC? All this threatening to break away and do our own thing and take all the bids and have our own tournament. Like, doesn't the SEC need a foil? Don't they need the rivalry with the rest of the country and with the Big Ten to be sort of at their best, if that makes sense?
Well, it depends on who you ask, because what they did was, you know, a chief rival could have been in the Southwest and they just plucked the two biggest brands. You know what I mean? I think that what you're seeing,
they're not different culturally enough, I don't think.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair because you have A&M in Missouri. Yeah, and Arkansas, yeah. So yes. But I think that like you're seeing an entity that's almost too big. I don't want to say too big to fail, but too big. Like it and eventually you do enough mergers and acquisitions, and then you look around and there's nobody to merge with or acquire. And then what do you have? Then how do you spin the yarn? Then how do you tell the story? Big Ten, Michigan and Ohio State and USC and Oregon and Washington had better keep up their end of the bargain here so that the Big Ten actually is a foil to the SEC, so that there's some bulwark against it. And there's some conflict, because conflict is something you can tell a story around.
Yeah. I mean, the North-South thing has been baked into our college football experience for decades. And I think it's okay for us to just say that it's fun. It's okay. Like, certainly I'm assuming it can cross lines into places we don't want to go. But at the same time, I think it's inherent in rivalry between the Big Ten and the SEC, the North and the South, the West and the East. I think it's part of our entire existence. So listen, you've been very gracious. I appreciate your time. We went a little long here. I do apologize. So thank you for coming on. Why don't you tell everybody real quickly where they can all go, tell them to sign up, tell them to do all that stuff for me if you can.
Yeah. RJ_CFB on Twitter and Instagram. Podcast is Split Zone Duo. We're on YouTube. We're on Substack. We're on free feeds wherever podcasts are sold. We have a good time. And I love doing it with my guys, Alex Christian and Stephen Godfrey. So check us out once, twice, three times a week during the off season. We're pumping it out.
There you go. Sign up. Do appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much. Always enjoy talking to you. My name is Braden Gall. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week. Appreciate you.